Atop the stone to the ring wall, Ghost hunched, with white fur bristling. He made no sound, but his dark red eyes spoke blood.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons license music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
So, welcome to another episode of Two Champs and a Chump. I am Greg Atkinson, Dobbler, here for the first time in about a month or so.
Yeah, I think about a month. And, of course, your always lovable stalwart host, Will Lentz, Kenan.
You're giving yourself the stalwart keyword now?
Yeah, that's why I'm a chump. Coming back for more punishment. Stunting their ability to draw other better podcasts.
Well, today what we have for you is some regional discussion of just basic attendance results, more than anything. You know what I mean? Like what
happened? Broad overview.
Yeah, broad overview
of the first month or so of regionals.
And what do we have? Stats for maybe 10 to 15 or so.
I think 10-ish was about right, though I didn't count. 12.
All right. Very good. Yeah. Will just counted for you.
Exactly.
So we're going to talk a little bit about houses, what house is getting played the most, which agenda, what restricted. Kind of see how...
See if there's anything surprising out
yeah.
there.
I have not seen these results yet for the most part. I was slightly involved in tallying, but I've seen no summation. So I can't really say other than a general feel of, I think that this was, or I think that was, but I don't know. So, that we'll talk about that. After that, we're going to talk a little bit about the TV show with Kristen.
Yep.
And for our listeners, by the time you listen to this, you have probably watched through episode 5. But by the time we're recording, we've only had through episode 4. So, we're going to talk about those first 4 episodes. And then, I guess, little slops and props at the end.
Yeah. Same old, same old. There hasn't really been any exciting FFG news, really, that we've seen to comment on recently, at least at the time of this recording. The new chapter pack just dropped, so we'll wait and see what else we hear coming up. But if you have any comments and or suggestions and other feedback, make sure you hit us up, twochamps1chump. At gmail.com or on the Facebooks, Google+, Twitter, all that good stuff. But really, most of the discussion comes on Facebook now, with a little bit coming on Card Game DB in the postings there. So be on the lookout, though. I've started taking advantage of Darkspain's like social sharing stuff. So when I post that episode, I'm also sharing that post on like Dig and Reddit and StumbleUpon, of all things.
I don't even know what those things are.
Man, you're missing out.
You don't need to get into it. I know Reddit's for little kids that play Pokemon. That's
yeah,
what I know.
Yeah, yeah. No, the only one that I was actually going to say you're missing out on is StumbleUpon.
Okay.
The other one's not so much these days, but maybe it'll get us a little extra exposure. I do think the last couple episodes, the download counts had gone up some. They're in the 500-ish range.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when we had been sitting in the 400-ish range. So I think it's starting to make a little bit of a difference.
There are 500 people that listen to you.
Downloads.
So that doesn't, maybe that doesn't, they that could doesn't be having listening mean. Parties. There could be 7 people around a table all drinking their milk and cookies listening to our show.
They are gathering around the radio for our little fireside chats.
Wow.
Yeah. No, my guess is some of those are duplicates for one reason or another. The subscriber numbers do not look that high. Okay. I mean, but I've again, they're still going up. Yeah, yeah. A lot of people don't bother to subscribe; they just download.
Yeah.
So it either one gives a little bit of a skewed picture. So it's hard to say for sure. Somewhere between 200 and 500 listeners, I would say.
And this episode happens to be episode 111.
Our 111st episode.
Yes.
Welcome, listeners. I like less than half of you, half as well as you deserve. So, regionals.
Yes.
Okay, so we got everything tallied here. So we're probably not going to give you individual breakdowns for each of the regional events.
No.
Yeah, there's a thread going over on Card Game DB. yeah, WW Drakey's running it, kind of trying to compile tourney results for this spring, the regional and national events and whatnot. So you can kind of get the individual tournament pictures there and get, you know, a mention of who won each one, which we'll probably later look at how many houses were winning each event and whatnot, but we're looking at the big picture for right now. So let's take a look here. We'll probably start at houses, and we're gonna spring this on Greg. If he hasn't already glanced at the numbers here on the laptop, what house are you thinking, Greg, is probably going to be the most played right now? There is one winner, no ties.
Well, I am going to say Targ, but I'm only saying that based on the fact that I think most people perceive Targ as the best house right now, so that would be why I would say it's number one.
Gotcha. You're in for a surprise then? It's Stark.
Okay.
Right now, we've got tallies for 296 players. Now, not all of those players are necessarily unique. There may be some people that went to multiple events. But 60 players were playing Stark out of that. So, it's a good chunk.
60 out of 295, you said?
296.
So 296.
But rounding to 300 is probably easier numbers.
Okay, so 296 divided by 6, assuming there was no neutral house people, which I don't know if there was any neutral houses.
No neutral houses I've seen so far.
So you should average 50, right at 50, 49 per house, just about.
That's what we really ought to be challenging Bruno to win his next regional with, the neutral house. But anyway, yeah, so Stark with a clear but not commanding lead over Targaryen in second place at 54.
Okay.
So Targ is still up there.
Now, I don't want to get too deep into this conversation about skewing results, but the largest event was a European event that had 70 plus people. Now, in general, and I haven't looked at the specifics for this event, in general, Europe tends to be heavier with Stark.
Right.
Okay. Now, so my question is for that specific event, was Stark the leading house for that event? And by how much were they the leading event?
Actually, if I do look at the individual numbers, because I also have them on here. Actually, your first guess led there at Spain.
Okay.
18 for Targaryen, with Stark at 13, tied with Greyjoy in second place.
Well, that kind of shoots my theory down, though, that event was potentially skewing the results in favor of Stark, but that event would not be our culprit.
That particular one, not so much.
So, interesting. I do think for people that are new and jumping into the game, Stark is obviously one of the houses people jump into a lot, but I don't really
know
if that's...
They dig it from the books, and it's still... can be a very straightforward aggro playstyle.
Yeah, so I don't really know if that's what's going on here or if people are just gravitating towards Stark. I don't remember hearing of it winning many of these events, but maybe people are just enjoying playing it right now. So
yeah, I haven't heard much in the way of wins for it either. You know, what's interesting, though, are the third and fourth. Actually, the rest of these houses are all interesting to me, except for the number five house.
Stark was one at 65, you said.
60.
60. Yeah.
The rest of the exact numbers are probably not too specific, because I didn't bother to also calculate percentages on them.
Okay.
I mean, if we want to take the time to do that in Excel... we can, but I figured the rankings were going to be more interesting to us at the moment.
Sure.
Next up in third place, we've got Lanny, which really surprises
me. At 53.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Greyjoy at 49.
Okay.
Now, Greyjoy also really surprises me, especially, you know, Greyjoy was looking really strong before the restricted list hit. A lot of people were arguing, well, maybe it was going to be able to top Targ. Maybe it was in second place, right behind Targ. And then the restricted list hit, and Greyjoy didn't get touched, basically.
Yeah.
You know, King's Winter, it sort of affects them, and of course the refugee kind of does, but not nearly as much as anybody else.
Sure.
So I really would have expected Greyjoy to be more popular than that.
I'm surprised, too, to be honest with you. You know, we saw an interesting Greyjoy deck out in the Tulsa Regional.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately,
we do not have any stats for the Tulsa.
Hey, Tulsa people, post your stats.
Yeah. If anybody in the Tulsa meta is listening to us, please, please email me the stats from that or post them on the website. I don't know. They may have been available on the website before in that regionals post, but when I try to go look at like the player listings of the matches now, it just pops up and says like loading, and it never loads anything. So there may be a glitch if that information is hidden there but available. Anyway.
Okay.
So yeah, Greyjoy, much lower than I expected. You know who else is actually lower than I expected right now? Baratheon. Are in last place. Martell in fifth does not surprise me, but I really expected some of the what you might call the Bruno effect after his pretty well publicized win with Baratheon the Long Voyage over in at Kingdom Con, but it doesn't look like there's really been effect.
That particular event, if I remember correctly, there was not very much Baratheon at that event. Maybe only...
I think it was him and one other guy.
Yeah. So even if they're starting to be a skew towards Baratheon, it's got to overcome, I think, early results where Baratheon was not heavily played.
Yeah.
My thing, like, we have 41 out of the 295, whatever it was, or 296 was Martell, and 39 out of 296 was Baratheon. To me, the difference between 41 and 39 is only two entries. That's not very significant. Like, right. I see more of a significance between 4th and 5th place, where Greyjoy had 49 entries, and then 5th drops down 8 entries to the Martell 41.
There's a big drop.
Yeah, so you kind of have your leader. You have Stark at 1, and then there's a big drop, you know, fairly decent drop, you know, to Targ at 54. And then Targ and Lannister are right even with each other.
I didn't expect Lanny to be neck and neck with Targ up there right now.
My
best guess is the Power Behind the Throne kind of rush build that seems popular right now has proven to be both stronger and, of course, then more popular than people were really expecting before. It's definitely done better for me playing it than I would have expected, you know, a month ago.
That's my biggest surprise, is I did not expect to see Lanny third, really almost tied for second. You know, I would have expected to see Lanny. If you would have said, Greg, you know, Greyjoy is third, almost tied for second, as opposed to fourth, you know, that would have made more sense to me, you know. But instead, you know, Lanny's the one right up there in popularity.
Yeah, I mean,
right,
and
now,
Lanny,
so.
I guess, man, I don't know. It's kind of tough. Of course, Enslaved, one of their hot, newish control cards, got better now with the restriction of the Tin Link. But on the flip side, Pentoshi Manor did get restricted.
Yeah.
So they, you know, it's kind of a wash as far as whether they have more tools available to them now than they did before. So I'm not... My only real guess is that rush build is what's pushing them right now, or one of the rush builds. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, there's a couple different ways to go about that idea. And then Martell does not surprise me. The Maester's Path and Tin Link and Refugee Restrictions hit Martell Maesters hard. And then, likewise, the Kings of Summer Restriction, which probably would have been their next go-to agenda after that, hits them pretty hard.
Well, I think what we're going to find, though, is when we do results, I'm not going to say we're going to see an inverse of this, but we've already seen Baratheon win at least one regional. Mm-hmm. Martell has won a couple now. So I find it interesting that we see Baratheon and Martell at the bottom, and then we see Stark at the top, and for the life of me, I can't remember Stark winning one. And so, You know, and I don't. We don't need to get into the whole argument of car versus driver. You know, right. A lot of people say, "Well, who is it that's playing these decks?" And yes, that you cannot ignore that factor. But you know, when we have the follow up discussion, not today, but another day of looking at, you know, the actual winning decks, I think that we might find winning decks don't follow the same pattern of percentages here.
There's a very good chance about that. I think often winning decks will be a surprise in one mm-hmm. way or another. Certainly to the folks at the tournament that day, and then later looking at the stats. Mm-hmm. So any other observations about the houses before we move on from them?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, that pushes us down to agendas. Now, you have kind of been looking at some of the numbers
here.
I've only been looking at the house. Okay. So what's the most popular entry, do you think, for it?
I would say it's either Maester's Path. Well, are we counting no agenda?
I said the most popular entry.
Oh, okay.
I didn't say agenda on purpose.
Then the most popular entry is still going to have to be no agenda. You know,
most certainly, by a wide margin.
Okay, no agenda is number one. Now, if we're actually talking about agendas, I will say, I'm going to guess it's still Maester's Path, but with Long Voyage right on its tail.
Long Voyage is right on its tail, and I would have guessed Maester's Path. Unfortunately, it's not. It's several entries down.
Okay, so you're saying Long Voyage is right on the tail of the number one agenda.
No, the Long Voyage is right on the tail of Maester's Path. There are two decks different here as far as tallies go.
Oh.
But those two are several steps further down.
Interesting.
Yes.
All right.
While you're thinking, uh-huh. I'm just one quick thing about the no agenda. We do acknowledge this does not at all account for any of the character agendas because there's just no consistent record keeping of that.
Yeah.
So anything that's running Quentin or Aaron Dampere and Kindly Man, so on and so forth, all still wound up getting lumped in no agenda.
Which they should be. You are starting the game with no agenda.
Right.
You know, it'd be like the attachment that attaches as an agenda, right?
No, uh-uh. The attachments do not become agendas. You're thinking of Heavy Taxes and, the other one. The one that caps everyone at 4 gold and the one that makes them discard
if
they draw.
Okay, so they're not an agenda. They just can't, they just don't.
Yeah, they're like decree attachments, I think.
Okay.
Something like that.
Well, anyways, the point being is I don't think they should be counted as a no agenda deck. You are starting the game with no agenda.
Yeah.
The fact that you get one is because of a card in your deck.
Right.
So
I would like to be able to also have those stats though so that I could break that down. Because I'd be curious out of the, like, as far as figuring out what's going on in the meta,
mm-hmm.
I think that would give us a more accurate picture if it was possible, you know, to look at that and say, well, you know, there's 61 no agendas, but 30 of those were Quentin Martell.
Sure.
Or whatever. And go like, oh, well, okay. Since Martell got hammered on Maesters in summer, Quentin now is kind of their go-to option.
Yeah, it's such a different, when you choose to play with a character agenda, there's a different mindset. I mean, let's say you go against a Stark player. And they're running black sails. And you're like, well, I know they're going to have the new, you know, Wolf's Fleet or whatever it's called, you know, lower the cost.
Fleet
and all
of
a sudden,
White Harbor, I believe.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you see them drop a Northern Cavalry flank. Hell no, I'm not playing my Quentin. It's going to sit in my hand. I am not creating an agenda so that they can lower their 7-cost army to 4 and their Northern Cavalry flank doesn't kneel to attack. It's just different, you know?
Yeah.
You have the option to play no agenda for the whole game despite the fact that you have those characters in your deck potential. So I think we really should. Don't get me wrong. I understand you want the info. You want all the info you can have to analyze.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but I think I'm not sure that, at least from a perspective of reporting it, you know, then we should try and draw strong distinctions. Although I'm sure there are other people like you that are like, I want to know, you know. But
yeah. Well, okay. So the next one, the one that is the first actual agenda, is, 16?
Okay, hold on.
Total deck.
Give me
spot.
One more chance.
Yeah.
Knights of the Hollow Hill.
No.
No!
See, it's also interesting. I would have had a thought maybe with Knights of the Hollow Hill. Last year, it turned out to be way stronger, in turnout and placement than we expected. And with Maesters and things get taking these hits, I thought it would continue drifting up to the top, but it's not number one.
Okay, so Knights of All Hill, is it number two?
Yes.
Okay, Knights of All Hill is two, which makes Maesters there's pass
a still parade. There's still a pretty big drop, though, between... I mean, just to give you an idea, No Agenda had 61 appearances.
Okay.
House of Dreams... Oh, sorry. I had 45. Knights of All Hill only had 36.
Okay, and so House of Dreams is the number one agenda.
Actual agenda, yes. Now, also, I don't remember hearing any House of Dreams winning, but big turnout, which
yes, they have. No, there's been, it was one of the California ones. I don't know if we recorded it or not, but Lucas Sid, he's Sid on the board.
So yeah, Sid Less.
Something
Sid,
like that.
Yes.
He won with a Bolton deck with the Dreadford.
I did remember hearing that. Which one was that?
I think one of the California ones.
Was that San Francisco?
I don't know.
I know we've got San Fran on here.
Okay. I don't know.
We didn't worry about tallying
winners. There's a Stark winner, too. I totally forgot about that. A Stark winner.
We'll rectify those details a little better later. Yeah, so House of Dreams has a pretty steep drop from No Agenda, and then still a pretty steep drop down to Knights of Hollow Hill from there.
How many Hollow Hills were there?
36.
So you go from 45 to 36.
Mm-hmm. And again, a fairly steep drop to number 4. And this one, again, surprised me. And this is what I think kind of validates my thought process on one of the houses.
Okay.
The third most popular actual agenda was Power Behind the Throne at 27. Again, a marked drop in turnout.
But that is a house specific. That's all
right.
Wow.
Which makes me, once again, think Lannister having being that third most popular house, at neck and neck for number two, is on the back of Power Behind the Throne Rush.
That's very interesting to me. I mean, I'm not surprised that a lot of landing players are playing Power Behind the Throne. That doesn't surprise me. It surprises me that Power Behind the Throne is ahead of Maesters.
I know!
And ahead of the Long Voyage.
Now, it's not ahead of Maesters and Long Voyage by much. Maesters is up next at number 5.
Okay.
And it's only one deck behind at 26. Okay. Voyage tagging right along at 24.
Okay, so they're all right in the same ballpark. 27, 26, 24. You know, all within, you know, one or two entries there. So,
yeah.
But still, I will agree, that surprises me.
Yeah, it's feels like a fluke, you know. Now, you missed most of the analysis episodes last year. I think those pretty much all wound up being just me and Zyler. But one thing we really noticed looking at it is the card advantage agendas wound up being at the top. The strict card advantage.
Yeah.
Along with, as the season wore on, resource advantage agendas, which I would say yours, Knights of Hollow Hill, was. But challenge-based agendas... kind of fit in the middle. And then agendas that that have kind of their own worst enemy sort of thing. Mirror matches are bad sort of things. Even if they gave card advantage, wound up somewhere in the middle. So like Knights of the Realm, card advantage. But a Knights on Knights mirror match is terrible for one player.
Yeah.
So it still kind of wound up in the middle. Same sort of thing last year with Power Behind the Throne. Right? It's challenge-based rather than card advantage. So it didn't get real high last year. Mirror match is terrible for one player. I saw that at Worlds against Kyle. So it's kind of mind-boggling to see it up that high.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
In fact, looking at it, the number one and number two agendas... one, two, and three. The top three actual agendas are not card advantage agendas, I would say.
House of Dreams, Knights of Hollow Hill, and Power Behind the Throne. Now, House of Dreams, you can't classify.
It's tough. But
House of Dreams is like 100 agendas in one, right. Is really what it is.
Right. And, you know, some of these, depending on what location they were using, can become card advantage.
Yeah, Dreadford becomes a card advantage.
Right. Aegon's Hill or whatever it might be. But yeah, we can't really mark that down for sure.
Right.
Whereas something like the Long Voyage, we can just for sure. Say
card advantage. Yep. All right, so we went Knights of the Hollow Hill, Power Behind the Throne, Maesters, all right next, or excuse me, Power Behind the Throne, Maesters, and Long Voyage were all kind of lumped together there. Then we have another drop, huh?
Yeah. Another pretty significant drop.
And so with 17 of the 296 entries, we had Knights of the Realm and Black Sails, both at 17.
Yeah. So there we get a card advantage, and I guess I would say maybe card quality.
It's still advantage card advantage. Getting an
extra
still
card one, advantage. But it's maybe even slightly better because you get to search. I don't know. It's card advantage.
It's just more conditional. Yeah. You just can't. You know, we played a couple games. Well, no, we played one game.
It just before, felt like, yeah.
Well, last night we played a couple too, and you know, even on the turns where you don't get to search, you know, you're not getting the card advantage. But on the turns on the turns you do get to search your hold, you're not only adding a card to your hand, that's where the card
you're,
quality
you're
comes
basically
in.
You're going to get the best for card. Any turns that you didn't manage yeah. to get the search.
Yeah. You know, and it just becomes one of the, you know, most beneficial tutor effects in the game.
Yeah.
So, both of them at 17, then we have another little drop to our next house-specific mm-hmm. agenda, Siege, with 11 out of 295.
Which is surprising to me, I think. I don't know, the mirror match thing can get into a similar realm with the Power Behind the Throne mirror match, mm-hmm. but I think it's maybe worse for Power Behind the Throne because of the card differential that builds up quickly that way. Mm-hmm. You don't quite have that problem in Siege, though you do have to watch, you know, power totals.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the epic battles and naval stuff and whatnot, I don't know, it feels like those Siege builds have gotten a lot more recently than some mm-hmm. of the other stuff. So I'm surprised to see it lower down there.
Then we have Brotherhood at 8. And then after Brotherhood, you just have just a couple of each one.
A mishmash of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, Air has 5, Wildlings 4, Treaty with the Isles 3, and then like 3, 2, or 1
yeah,
for the rest
Knights
of them.
Watch
so, yeah.
Stuff. Though it is interesting to see Air to the Iron Throne popping up, even though there's only, you know, 5 of them.
Yeah, it's not
around.
Even 2%.
It's, yeah, but it's still been, you know, 1 at like half of the regionals
yep.
that we totaled up. And it's not terribly significant, but very interesting because I'm not used to seeing it in Joust. A lot of people, I think, had kind of written it off in Joust for one reason or another.
Where it's interesting, I think what's even allowing for there to be 5 is the fact that dragons are playable again. And, you know, I would not be surprised if 80%, if like 4 out of 5 or all 5 of those were dragon decks. And, you know, now that we're seeing dragon decks win tournaments, you know, people, you know, where we saw it in Tulsa, we saw a Dragon Maester deck and we saw a Dragon Long Voyage deck. But we still have a Dragon Air deck, too, mm-hmm. you know? So,
you know, and that new Dothraki that gets, that already has stealth and the games are now on Power Talent mm-hmm. is going to be great for air decks, too.
Yes. So, I don't know. I was surprised by that. I mean, I like House of Dreams. I was surprised to see it at number one. It wasn't my first 3 guesses. What did I guess?
Yeah.
I guess Maester's Path, and I guess
Long Voyage,
and Knights of the Hollow Hill. And so I was definitely surprised at House of Dreams being
yeah,
so high.
It just because it feels like city plots are real popular right now, and I think only bound to get more popular with the more, you know, city plots floating around now with King's Landing coup and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes City Besieged a very real possibility of something you're going to see floating around. Naval stuff in one way or another is the new hotness, which means that was a Battle for the Shield Islands is going to be popular.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not you know, an absolute auto loss for House of Dreams, but they do have to watch out for initiative on that turn. If they're first player, then they could wind up getting screwed. Mm-hmm. If they're second player, then they might be okay, but It just feels like it has a lot against it at the moment.
Yeah. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, we have one more tally of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Restricted card, but if my understanding correctly, not every regional we tallied gave us restricted cards.
Right. I want to say there were 2 that didn't have, but it may have been 3.
Okay, our total is not going to be 296 in this one, is it?
Yeah.
It's going to be something less than that.
It's going to be lower, but we did what we could with what we had. So what would you guess is the most popular restricted card then?
Because
I find this stuff very interesting now that we've got such a large restricted list. There's more tallying, but choices.
Well, you have to factor in, you know, we said the Maester's Path was the fourth most played agenda. Mm-hmm. So we know it's being used, and it's restricted. So that's going to be really high on my list. Restricted or Maester's Path would be one of my choices. I still think we're seeing Search and Detain a lot. Bruno played it in his deck out in Kingdom Con, and you know I'm seeing it elsewhere. I had it played against me in Tulsa twice, so I know it's getting played. I've been kind of surprised. I've seen several Bolton Refugees, a lot more than I thought I'd see out of Stark decks. You know, considering Stark was one of the most played houses in our overall played list, I wouldn't be surprised to see Mira at the top of the list. Those would be my four choices right there.
Okay. Well, number one, indeed, is the Maester's Path.
Okay.
With 20 appearances out of what we had
available.
Number two and three, though, right on its heels, with 19 appearances each, Search and Detain and Mirror Reed.
Okay, I'm confused. 20 Maester's Paths, but didn't we have more than 20 Maester's Paths on the agenda list?
We did have agendas for all of the regionals.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So,
but if they didn't report the entire like restricted list...
We didn't report the entire thing. So even though we might have known three Maester's Paths were in the list, we didn't add three Maester's Paths to our restricted totals.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, I understand now.
Right.
Okay, so 20... You said there's 20 Maester's Paths, and what was next?
Search and Detain and Mira at 19 each.
Okay, where's my fourth choice, Bolton Refugee?
The... let's see, Stark Refugee.
Only three?
Most of the way down.
Oh, God, I was way wrong on that.
It's in that little bits and pieces area. I mean, I don't think that many Stark decks were really going to pick the Bolton Refugee over Mira.
I thought I had seen several reports online of them, but I don't know. Maybe I was looking at non-regional events, too. Mm-hmm. So.
Or maybe someone was mentioning them for one of these events that we didn't have restricted stats.
That's possible, too.
But yeah, I don't know. You know, it's interesting. Much like Power Behind the Throne being a little bit of a surprise since it's house-specific, Mira's house-specific. The top two... are not, so they can appear anywhere. But Mira is going to be strictly Stark, or, you know, I think we saw one City of Shadows deck in our tallies, so that one might have been using Mira.
We've told our listeners, you know, what the top four are, you know, Maester's Path, Search and Detain, or top three, Maester's Path, Search and Detain, Mira, Reed. Then we have a drop. We have a drop to our fourth one, which is Fear of Winter, which we had 14 people play out of the 195 results that we got back. And clumped right next to it was Viper's Bannerman, 13. And then not very far from that was Hatchling's Feast at 11. No restricted card at 11, and Pyromancer's Cash at 10.
Yeah.
That's actually my biggest surprise.
The double digits. What is?
11. No restricted cards. Out of 195 entries we were given, 11 no restricted. That means 5% aren't even playing a restricted. We have a big restricted list now.
I was going to say, prior to the February update, I could see. You know, there were decks that just happened to not have one that looked all that appealing.
Yeah.
But once you get 40-ish cards, one of those... I think is going to be a good idea, especially if the refugees are on that list.
Yeah.
If your deck doesn't skew towards one of the other directions, bam, play it for setup, you know? Or one of the control plots, you know, Search and Detain or even Retaliation. Sorry, it's not really a control, but...
Even a Fury plot.
Right.
I'm really surprised. 11 out of 195 having no restricted card. That really surprises me. I would expect to see a couple.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking melee, I'd expect to see more than a couple for melee because the melee restricted list isn't very big. But for Joust, it boggles my mind. You know, that's really about 6% are not playing a restricted card.
Yeah.
Now, maybe that 6% corresponds with new players. 6% new players that don't have the card pool and don't have a restricted just because they don't even have the cards, which is hard for me to fathom that they don't even have the restricted cards. But that's the only excuse I can really come up with is players that just don't have very many cards. And
You know, speaking of restricted cards and new players and stuff, you know, I have actually heard a report that at least one regional, all right, my cousin who is overseas in Spain teaching English may wind up being pissed. okay, so I have heard reports of it, at least one regional, that what I thought would happen did indeed happen. Now, only happening once is good. Not nearly as bad as I was afraid of, but yes, someone did show up with two restricted cards. And, I mean, just there's so many on the list now, it doesn't surprise me that it did indeed happen. And I forget now if they wind up having to get DQ'd and had... Or if they had enough to just take a loss that game and pull some cards from their deck or what. But
no, that stinks.
Yeah, bummer for them. But you mentioned the Bolton refugee, the Stark one earlier, which is way down there. Which refugee do you think is actually the most high placing?
Well, I would have said Bolton. If it's not Bolton, my next guess is Greyjoy.
Yeah. That is indeed correct. Now, it doesn't have that many entries. It's like six, so it's not a ton, but it's definitely the highest placing refugee. You know what did seem interesting to me, though, as well? Speaking of refugees, though, we did have a couple people using the neutral one, the Veil refugee.
Really?
Yeah.
That boggles my mind. That makes no sense.
I don't know
why
they wouldn't use the in-house one first.
Maybe they just wanted the extra icon.
Maybe. It's possible. I don't know.
Interesting.
You know, and speaking of that, of those sort of cycle cards, there's another one. There are a couple Furies on the list. Which Fury do you think saw the most play?
Fury of the Kraken.
Most certainly. Again, it's about the same number as refugees, though. There were five Furies.
But the logic simply makes sense. I chose the Greyjoy refugee, and I chose the Greyjoy Fury because they don't have other cards on the restricted list. So
exactly.
It just made sense to say they were probably going to be the most played one.
Yeah. You know what's not getting chosen? Hardly at all. And I figured they would go down, but I didn't expect it to go down quite this much after the restriction.
What's that?
Kings of Summer and Winter.
Let me ask you this question. Was the Tin Link ever chosen?
No. Which was something else I thought of earlier, but kind of forgot it as we talked.
The Tin Link, it's such an interesting card, because obviously, before it was restricted, having it on your agenda means you have this readily available attachment removal card. At any point in time, you can basically win a challenge with a Maester on the board, right? But, by restricting it, therefore making it unplayable with the Maester's Path, which is also restricted, you have to main deck it in a deck that has enough Maesters that you can legally put it on someone.
Yep.
Which basically means people aren't going to play it. If you're running that many Maesters, they're going to be running the Maester's Path. And that card, I have now come to believe that card, more than any other card over the last 2 years, has shaped the metagame.
Oh, yeah.
And we are seeing...
It constrained
the metagame, I think. We are seeing new decks pop up like crazy. People all of a sudden, ooh, I can use attachments again, you know? And
evidently, this is Daryl that you've been hearing, because that definitely sounded drunk.
Nothing has made me more pleased for building decks than knowing I'm not going to have to face that card. And overall, I think it's a good thing. I'm not real pleased with the new Ygritte that's coming out, because I'm afraid she's going to do the same thing for neutral cards. But
yeah.
Neutral characters,
that is. Because she's considerably easier than, say, your favorite army.
Men with No King. Yeah, Ygritte hits any neutral and Night's Watch, because, yes, the Night's Watch need more things to hurt them.
Exactly. And, now, the one person that played them at a regional, according to our stats, won't play them anymore.
So, interesting numbers, though. A few things surprise me. Other things don't surprise me. A few things I think are good for the game. And I think there's another discussion to be had by us once we start seeing the top decks, like maybe taking a top 8 or wherever tournaments decided to make their cut, like top 16, top 8, top 4, right, whatever it happened to be, taking the cut decks and then doing analysis of those.
Oh, yeah.
And then
many of them have posted that so that we can collate that info too.
Yeah, and then comparing that to these results and seeing where there's stark not literal stark, like stark in the game, but where there's drastic increases or decreases in winning decks versus general population decks.
Yeah.
So be interested to see that.
We'll get on it.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of regional season left, so more analysis to come.
Yep. All right. So about the show.
Yeah. I'm sure folks have been desperately waiting to hear us talk about the show, which I've been avoiding doing since Daryl keeps appearing on the show yet refusing to watch this season for some reason.
You watched episode 1.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I thought he said he hadn't watched any.
Well,
of
he
so
was
far.
Getting caught up on season 2, and then he said something about watching the first episode of season 3, but he could have been lying to me too.
He was probably lying.
So, I guess it goes without saying for our listeners, if you have not watched up to episode 4 of season 3, I mean, cover your ears or sing la 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 la, whatever. I mean, I would say turn off the podcast, but that kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, you should still listen to the entire podcast. Just hope that you don't hear anything through your earmuffs. So, you know, in order to replace our erstwhile co-host that doesn't know what's going on, we've brought in a special guest star for this segment who has watched the first 4 episodes of the show. Say hi.
Hi.
Oh, I was about to say hi. I thought you were talking about me. Oh.
You're still an erstwhile co-host yourself, I think. So you're not,
good point.
You haven't really replaced an erstwhile co-host.
Yeah, and I'm not really a special guest star. I'm just a special star.
Something special, very special. Greg rides an incredibly short bus. Maybe he drives it, I don't know.
Probably drives it.
Yeah. So, just so anybody that is listening now that hasn't heard you on many, many months ago, who are you?
I'm Kristen, otherwise known as Boobs.
Everyone's looking at me for some reason. I don't know why.
Also, I was just wondering
how girlfriend, I guess. I was going to say,
how often do you ask her the same question? Who are you again?
And she's like, boobs. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I knew there was a reason I liked you.
So, we're going to talk about episode 4. Not necessarily boobs.
Just episode 4? Were there boobs in episode 4? I don't really remember.
It's HBO. There's boobs in almost every episode.
There have been in some of the episodes. I just don't remember any in that one.
I don't remember any. I mean, they talked about Podrick's pod some more.
There were definitely boobs in episode 3. And yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. What is up with this pod stuff? Does it feel a little weird?
Well,
to
the
you
first
guys?
Is, do you believe it's legit? Like, do you believe that this is an actual plot line as it's being presented, that Pod is some sort of superhero in the bedroom, or do you believe that this is actually like Tyrion pulling the strings to truly give Pod the best gift ever? Like, did Tyrion actually pay the whores to give the money back?
Wow. It's like the inception of whores right there. Wow. Except that description actually just gets even more kinky, because then that would be like a whore within a whore, right? And I mean within. I don't know. Or is it just a running gag? Because that's what it looks like right now, is that it's just a running gag, which feels weird.
Well, they've now strung it along multiple episodes, because you have, okay, Tyrion gives the gift to Pod. Here's multiple women for you. What's behind door number 2?
Okay, I mean, it was a pretty funny scene.
And then at the end of that episode, and was that episode 3 when that happened?
Yeah.
And then the end of that episode, you know, of course, Pod comes back with the, you know, the little pouch of money that's been given back to him.
Which I would have just kept it.
And I thought, okay, this was really silly. And then episode 4, they introduced the whole conversation with Roz the Whore and Varys.
Right.
To accentuate this particular point.
That's what I'm saying. Like, is it just... Because that that brief little bit appeared to just be played for laughs. But can I go back to a minute to where my girlfriend said she would keep the money? Now, just for my own personal clarifications, which end of that transaction would you be on when you kept that money?
Shut it.
Okay.
If I were Pod, I would have just kept the money.
Oh, see, I thought you were saying if you were someone other than Pod.
That's what I thought she meant. No. But now that I know that she would be Pod, now I've got to picture Kristen and the two girls.
There were three, actually.
Three girls. It just gets better and better.
You're picturing Kristen as a man. Just
well,
I'm just saying, know, it just gets better and better.
Todd's kind of got that girlish face.
Yeah, I'm not sure you want to go down that
road. Not really, not really. You know, I'm just going to stick
you're
with...
You're kind of digging yourself
with, I don't know, something. I don't know what.
Okay, so that's the frivolity of episode 4, is what in the world's going on with this stupid plot. Pod plot line. Otherwise,
I will have to say, though, you are kind of wrong, even though it's not, like, a full-on boob like in that third episode. If you think of Marjorie Tyrell's outfit, it has that cut out in the front,
yeah,
so
yeah.
You get a little side
so,
boob.
You know,
going out.
You can see about half.
Uh-huh.
You can see, like, the inside side of each of her boobs. So, you put that together, that's pretty much one boob, right?
No, I think that there's a certain nipple requirement
you know,
to ever be considered one boob.
You know, thinking about that, though, when Dany goes to whichever city it is she winds up in book 5, I forget the name now, and they wear the tokars, where one boob is exposed, like, all the time, that's just how the dress is. Like, do you think HBO's going to do that when they get there?
Yes.
They're just going to literally have Emilia Clarke walk around with just one breast out.
You want to know my
personal
opinion? Is
because their viewership will go through the roof.
I think Emilia Clarke might actually have reached a status now that we may not ever see her naked in the show again.
Now, I don't want to say too much for Kristen, who hasn't read book 5, but... I don't know how they're going to show Dany in book 5 if they don't do that.
Let me ask you this.
Have there are ways that you can get around
have you
it.
Seen Cersei naked?
You haven't read book 5.
Have you seen Cersei naked in the show? Ever?
I don't really want to,
okay,
I suppose.
You never
so
have.
Miss,
no. She was considered
it.
One of the most beautiful women in Westeros. You have not seen her naked. Because her actor, or actress, Lena Headey, is actually one of the top-billed actors, actresses on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, honestly, within another season of this, Emilia Clarke is going to be at a potential level where she may say, I don't want to do that anymore.
That's going to be a bummer for an awful lot of fanboys. But, as far as the novels go, again, try not to spoil book 5 in front of Kristen. Think about how many scenes of a certain nature we have Cersei in over the course of the novels. Not that many, really. Off the top of my head... On camera, so to speak, in the books, not that many. People talk about it a lot. Oh, she's
there's multiple
she's
Jamie
fucking
scenes.
Like Osmond Kettleblack. Yeah,
there's multiple Jamie,
probably
scenes.
Moonboy for all I know. But
there's
but they don't really detail it the same way Dany gets details in book 5.
No, even Cersei has her little
except for the scene with the one
woman.
That I'm trying not to spoil from book 4.
No, that's book 3.
No, it's book 4.
Is it?
Yeah, it's from Cersei's point of view.
You're right.
Which
you're
is
right.
Why it's such a creepy scene.
You're right.
I mean, but aside from that one and, like, Jaime at the beginning, I don't really remember as much
she
as
Jaime has Jamie
in
scenes.
Book 5.
The one when he gets back and tries to... whatever.
Yeah.
All right, so...
yeah, see, it's really tough to not spoil stuff past where Kristen is, because... For anybody listening, she's also reading book 3 right now.
and I'm around 350 pages left.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so...
So we don't want to spoil anything from further in the books.
Let's get away from the boob topic here for a little while.
Whoa! Is there anything else to talk about? One last boob thing. Do you think whoever plays Marjorie Tyrell will ever get to be a big enough name that we won't still see Marjorie's boobs?
Well, she's already revealed boobs in multiple shows. My understanding is the show she came from
before... Oh, did
she
in The Tudors?
Yes,
did
she reveal boobs in there?
I must not have watched far enough into The Tudors. I only watched the first, like, four episodes.
My understanding is that happened in there. I didn't watch it. That's just what I heard. So,
it looked like a good show, though, from what I hear.
You know that she's in Captain America? I was watching Captain America, and I said, there's Marjorie Tyrell.
Who is she the love interest?
She does not reveal her boobs.
I don't even remember now.
No, she's the little secretary that hits on him when he gets caught.
Oh.
That's cool.
Okay.
I like her pretty well. I mean, if we stick with Marjorie for a sec, I really like what they're doing with her in the HBO show.
No, they're doing a good job with her.
They're playing her up a little bit more. Like, in the books, you just kind of have Cersei's kind of fears about what she thinks Marjorie's up to.
Right.
But you kind of get the impression, like, maybe Cersei's just overreacting.
Because it's Cersei.
Yeah, and it's really just, like, the Queen of Thorns and Randall Tarly, or Mace Tyrell, just, like, trying to grab power and stuff. And this puts a good bit more of it on Marjorie in the show, and I'm digging that.
So, can we get away from boobs now?
I got away from boobs. I talked about Marjorie's character for a while.
This is all just transition from boob. I mean, even Marjorie. Okay.
Most of the world revolves around boobs, Greg.
Okay, you're not entirely wrong.
See?
So,
Kristen can't even naysay me.
I feel like episode 4 had two phenomenal scenes that... While not directly, like, they are the same scenes from the book. I mean, they didn't stick scene for scene from the book, like, word for word. But both Craster's Keep and, you know, Dany's scene when she frees the Unsullied. Those two scenes I thought were phenomenal.
They were
done.
Amazing.
You know, the minor quibbles I had are really so minor. Like, why in Craster's Keep was the... vocal Night's Watch guy, someone we'd never even met before. Hey, someone I've never even met, I'm going to speak up and say, I hate what we're doing right now. Yeah. I'm going to lead the rebellion against you.
And it was someone I recognized from another show.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
But we had not been introduced to him at all. And I'm like, that's kind of weird, you know? Yeah.
Oh, sorry. When I said other show, I didn't mean like another episode of Thrones.
No, I know. It's okay. Yeah. But otherwise, I loved it. I mean, like, I thought that was riveting. Even having read that scene multiple times in the books, watching it happen, I thought was pretty dang sweet. And then the Dany scene with the Unsullied and Drogon and all
that was great.
Pretty phenomenal.
I think that probably, it felt like that should have happened last episode, but it was still very gratifying to have that payoff. Finally, I'd been waiting for it.
I know. I was like on the edge of my hotel bed and just like tense and super excited the entire time, just waiting for it.
Oh yeah, it was killer. So there was one little bit of hokiness in the middle of it that pulled me out of it, but
most of it was awesome. Beating their spears on the ground?
Or no. I was fine with the slow clap, so to speak. No, there was this scene with the camera like down towards the ground, looking up at Dany as she's trying to look all regal off the side, and there's a concrete wall behind it. Well, not concrete, stone wall.
Yeah, it
looks
like Michael Bay-ish.
Yeah, it looked like Michael Bay or like a 90s James Bond movie or something. Because suddenly the stone wall behind her is like on fire and exploding, and I'm like, concrete doesn't blow up. But I mean, whatever. It looks cool for a lot of people, but it made me think of, like Kristen said, Michael Bay.
It's exactly what I was thinking of. Was, oh, hello, Michael Bay. When did you enter this?
I mean, I'm sure it was just supposed to be Drogon flying by, breathing fire. But you couldn't actually see Drogon. You just see the fire.
They don't call him Drogon in the show anyways. Well, big dragon, little dragon, and medium dragon.
Yeah.
I want the big dragon. I don't even know why Dany's not calling them by their names. It seems weird.
Maybe she thought it was unnecessary to him.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to keep him anyway, so.
I know. I just think that they're intentionally, like, almost not bringing their names in, and I'm just wondering why. Has she ever named them by name in any episode?
I think she named them
when they were born.
Yeah.
I'd have to rewatch it, but I think that I thought she did,
but I don't remember them being said since then. I mean, even when she was like, "Where are my dragons?" She was just like, "Where are my dragons?"
Yeah. I don't know. But I was still well done scene.
Oh, yeah. I mean, otherwise, it was
with
awesome.
The big dragon. Like, frying,
the dragon is no slave and all that. Oh, it was sweet. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, related to that, let's see. I'm trying to think. I think this actually was in episode 3, now that I'm thinking about it. Another one of my very favorite lines from the books popped up. But like I said, I think it was the episode before. When Selmy and Jorah are walking along with her and talking about her coming back to Westeros and stuff, and basically, you know, talking about her brother, and Jorah winds up saying, you know, Rhaegar fought honorably, Rhaegar fought nobly, and Rhaegar died, and whatever. And it felt like such a throwaway line, the way they did it in the show. Like, he just kind of, Rhaegar fought honorably, and whatever. Like, he just almost kind of, like, mumbled it out. Like nobody was listening or paying attention to him, and they just swept right on by, which really bummed me out, because when I read the novels, like, that's one of the powerful lines that stuck with me, and it didn't have any weight to it in the show.
Didn't it end a chapter, too, in the book, too? I think it was, like, the final maybe? Sentence in a chapter.
I don't remember that part for sure now.
I could be wrong, but I thought it was. But and honestly, it was such a throwaway in the show, I didn't even notice it was said in the show.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice.
Jorah said it, but yeah, they totally skimmed over it, which just felt like a wasted opportunity for me.
Another scene, and I can't remember if this was in episode 3 or 4. I think it was 4, but maybe it was 3. When Arya gets taken down into the Brotherhood, when they're basically accusing the Hound. That was episode 4, right? They're accusing the Hound of all the atrocities.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he basically... It was the first scene we've gotten to see the Hound shine in a long time. You know, and I'm not even sure we got to see him shine enough, you know, during his flight from King's Landing. I mean, we saw it happen, but in the books there's more description to that. And we got to see, you know, kind of a weird side of him.
Yeah.
But I thought they did a great job with him, you know, just sort of like, you know, I didn't do this stuff. You know, that's my brother. Don't blame me. I just thought the actor who did him, I loved that scene, actually.
And thinking of that scene, Kristen's read it more recently than me. That's when he gives his big spiel about knights in the book. And their honor, and he's basically like, you know, shove it up your ass. Like, a fancy name doesn't mean anything. You're all liars. I'm the only honest one here. Does he say that before or after he fights Beric?
Before.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because
they kind of did in the show, not in full detail like they did in the book, but he did kind of like, well, you are still so-and-so, and you're still so-and-so, but not quite as epic as
I wish
book.
They'd done more of it, because that was one of the big things in the book that I dug. Which is why I always say, like, one of the only honest characters in the books at all is the Hound. Because he's not trying to cover it up. I mean, at some point he says something, like, to Sansa, doesn't he? Like, the world isn't pretty.
Until Arya called him out, he was still going to lie that he hadn't killed anyone.
Well.
So.
I didn't say he was completely honest, but one of the most honest characters.
I don't think he was even. I don't even think, like, him not mentioning Micah was him lying. He probably never thought about it. That was basically him following orders. King says, go hunt this boy down. He goes and hunts it down. I mean, how many people had he probably killed in his life? Tens and twenties, you know, thirties, hundreds, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, basically he was responding to their question of who he killed. And he's like, I didn't kill any of these people you told me to kill. You know, so.
Yeah, like I'm not a great person, but I haven't done what you're accusing me of.
Yeah.
And you trying to execute me for that makes you no better than my brother.
Yeah. So I thought that scene was very
and
well done.
He, and he got into more of his hatred of his brother, I think, in the books than they touched on it in the show, but not quite as much.
No. But still, I thought that scene did just did a great job because we've kind of been absent of the Hound for a while, you know, or I don't know. I just liked
it. Now I'm going to be pumped for next episode. Double future spoiler alert for anyone that hasn't read the novels. But next episode will be the fight between Beric and the Hound. And I'm trying to brace myself because I know it's not going to be as awesome. Like
I've been so disappointed with every sword fight this season. Yeah. I have been so disappointed with every sword fight. Right now, I do not have my hopes.
Well, not just like the sword fight, but in the books, like you still haven't seen a whole bunch of magic at that point in the novel.
Yeah,
and like there's such tension, and you don't know what's going on, and you don't know why Beric is actually like around, like because you've heard that he's died and stuff, and when he like pulls that blade across his arm and his blood runs down it and then catches fire, like I'm pretty sure I gasped audibly when I read that the first time. And I just know it's not going to have that same impact in the TV show.
Two things. One, it hasn't happened. I don't even know if it will happen this season yet. I'm assuming they'll probably save it till next season. But I got through the Bran chapter where they meet up with Sam and where Sam is taking them. Dealing more with magic, and I was really excited. Anyway, so the other part was, even though it wasn't really a sword fight scene that was supposed to be awesome, they really super downplayed the quabble between Brienne and Jaime as far as what caused such a ruckus for them to be noticed.
Yeah. And that made Jaime look really crappy, I'll be honest.
Jaime was... See, and I think that they tried to cover it up at the very beginning of episode 2. They had the sword fight in episode 1. It was the very beginning of episode 2 after they've been caught. Yeah. And they're on the horse, and Jaime's making excuses for that. Yeah. And I'm like, I feel like they're actually trying to cover that up on the show because that sword fight was so... bad.
Yeah.
It was so bad. And then last one.
Awful.
This last one, when he falls off the horse.
The choreographer, like, they happen to not hire a good one, or.
I don't know. Jaime was considered one of the best, if not the best, swordsman in all of Westeros.
I mean, with Barristan Selmy gone across the sea, that pretty much leaves Jaime as the best. I think Selmy was the only other person that would have been in contention.
So, yeah, I've been very disappointed with every battle scene so far, like, sword-wise. Yeah.
And maybe the Darkstar, come to think of it, but that gets into book 4. Yeah.
So...
They better not screw up the Beric and Hound one.
Yeah. Okay, who is the guy that actually has Jaime right now? Who captured them? Bolton? Which Bolton?
I think it's supposed to be Vargo, but they just folded the Bloody Mummers into Bolton's forces.
Okay.
And skipped his lisp.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure
it's irritating
too. I know. I wanted to hear him say Thafire so badly.
I know. For some reason, that's comedic relief that I'm okay with.
Okay. And another question. Okay. So basically, Boltons have Theon. Boltons. Let Theon run because the Boltons.
Thank goodness we're recording this after episode 4 and not after episode 3. Yeah. That's what I want to say.
After episode 3, I'm like, what in the world is going on?
Because as
you watch that show, I just figured they're letting him go to chase him down because they do like to do that in the books, okay?
Yeah.
But then the guy kills the people that are chasing him
down. Exactly. Like, oh. That was the point when I was maybe he's really being rescued.
Okay, so then what's going on? But then they did all that just to bring him back to the little cross torture thing. And I'm like, what?
So
I don't.
Stupid.
Now. All that being said, what we do have to understand timeline-wise is I don't think they can do on the TV show what they did in the books, which is make us believe Theon was gone. Because in the books, there's a very little time lapse in between the end of book 3 and book 5.
Well, okay? As long as you're talking chronologically.
Yeah, chronologically, there's really no time lapse, okay? So
page count-wise, it's many. Yes. Year, real time,
it's nothing.
It's a lot.
Oh, right.
Real time, our time.
Yeah. But my point being
we thought he was dead for like a decade.
So this stuff could very well have been going, like what we're seeing with Theon could very well have been going on during the time lapse when we didn't know Theon was even alive.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden it's like, and again, we probably shouldn't even say it anymore. Spoilers if you haven't read book 5, whatever. But, I mean, we thought Theon was dead for the most part. Oh, Theon's brought back with this guy that's been tortured and maimed and is hardly even...
totally spoiled that for Kristen.
Okay, well, sorry. But I basically... Well,
there was a huge spoiler, too, about Tywin, so...
You know. Yeah, but we didn't spoil the Red Wedding for you, did we?
Oh, my gosh! I'm going to cry like a baby when I see that scene!
Yeah, I think I'm already thinking it's going to be episode 9 of this season.
It's the, it's totally the second to last episode, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I know! I'm going to be so upset.
So, I think that all they're doing is just filling in the time lapse with Theon that we didn't get to see happen. And as long as he just stays prisoner, and I guess that's what they're doing. We're going to keep you prisoner, but we got to do something with you. So run away, catch you. Maybe they'll let him run away again, catch him.
We'll see. Here's the thing. I was chatting with someone about that. I think it was Matthias, but I don't remember for sure who I was chatting with about it. But basically, you know, they said the same thing to me. And I was like, yeah, but I don't think they realize... The viewers would be fine not seeing him till season 5.
Yeah.
In fact, there are probably viewers that won't even want to see him come back then. You know?
I don't like Theon anymore.
I'd be fine. I just don't like Theon.
Not either.
He is one of the oddly conflicted characters in the book. Don't get me wrong. Characters have different conflicts. But most of the conflicts are pretty straightforward. You know? I mean... Tyrion has the conflict with alcohol and whores. Okay. Cersei has the conflict by just being a psycho bitch.
Yeah.
Theon, like, really has identity issues. Okay. Like, is he a Stark? Is he a Greyjoy? You know, is he loyal to Rob? Is he loyal to his family?
Is he something else entirely? Yeah,
I get tortured.
Maybe we shouldn't say too much in front of Kristen.
Yeah. So, anyways. But I basically put this episode 4 in my top 3 or 4 episodes of all seasons right now. Of all seasons.
Yeah.
This one was
great.
By far one of my best, on par with, say, Battle of the Blackwater, episode 9 of season 2, episode 9 of season 3, which is, you know, or episode 9 of season 1, which is Eddard getting his head lopped off. And, you know, those are the most memorable episodes to me.
This one was episode 9 of season 3.
Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a lot of good episodes this season. They were off to a slow start, I think, trying to reintroduce everyone again.
Which you have to.
But now I think they've hit the point where they can hit their stride and start getting into some of this big stuff we want to see. I'm a little curious, because I agree with you guys that episode 9 of this season is almost certainly going to be the Red Wedding. So it makes me wonder how they're going to tackle the other big wedding,
Joss' wedding. Near the end
you think it'll be in this season, or will they push that to next season?
Next
season. Okay.
Because it's so far along in this book. Because, I mean, I still haven't even gotten to it yet, so I don't see them doing it until next.
And then it makes sense to hold off introducing the Viper till then.
Or you could do episode 9 and 10, double weddings. And then episode 4, or not episode, season 4 ends up
the fallout after
the fallout after both weddings, with the climax of season 4 being Battle at the Wall and...
/ the duel.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be a sweet episode 9. If they could, counterpoint those two battle scenes, that would act... And, just literally flip between them for a while during that episode... That would be sick.
What about episode 9 flipping between the two weddings of season 3?
That would also be sick. But you know what they're going to do? They're going to fuck us over and let us down. Because now that we're talking about battle scenes and not just sword fights. I want to back up here because I don't think I've had the opportunity to bitch on the show as much as I wanted to about this. Episode 1 of this season was the biggest fucking letdown HBO's ever given me. They spent... all that budget on CGI and all that build-up with the white army flooding towards the Fist of the First Men, the end of season 2, last episode, left us on that cliffhanger and then showed zero of it except for this one shambling little white coming after Sam that they burn.
Oh,
it was the biggest waste of their budget, of... audience expectations. It was just poor filmmaking, so to speak. TV making, in this case. It was all around poor decision making on their part. Anyway,
Well, gets off his soapbox. Kind of.
For a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put one foot down.
Greg's got the other foot up, maybe.
I don't know. I think Greg wanted to respond, but now he's looking at me like he doesn't actually believe I'm done.
I don't disagree. It definitely was disappointing. You know, I'm sitting there watching that at the beginning of season, or episode one, just thinking, why is Ghost pulling on this little zombie?
Yeah.
Why is Ghost not with John?
Yeah.
You know? I was at least happy to see him, because I was afraid they'd just written him out of the show for some unknown reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a random part with Ghost, because it was not till a long ways in the book, a good fourth of the way, I want to say, that...
By the way, that's the one ring.
This is why I take my ring off and don't play with it during episodes.
Just in case you didn't trust me, it is the one ring.
Hmm. Where'd you get that?
Do I need to begin quoting you the book?
Maybe it even has the inscription on the inside, too.
Yes.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow not as heavy as I expected it to be. I shouldn't be getting that back. It's a sad day when I have more self-restraint than Greg does.
Well, I have no self-restraint. I don't know why you would think I do.
Good point.
All right, well, we were kind of bitching. Yeah, well, yeah, you can.
Okay, so moving on. What else has been awesome in the show? The Queen of Thorns.
I think love they've her. Done a
great job.
Oh my that. Gosh.
They have made her so incredibly snarky, just like she is in the books.
Oh, I love it. Like, I'd already been excited about it because I watched Downton Abbey and whatnot.
Yes,
so I love the Dowager Countess, and the two remind me of each other a lot.
Yes.
So I was like, well, you know, I don't know. Because there's already this other popular character in another show very similar. I don't know what HBO's going to want to do, if they'll want to play that up or not. And they totally have, and it makes me extremely happy.
Where's left and right, though?
Yeah, I know. That's a good question. But the scene between her and Varys was awesome.
I feel like they have done a great job with Varys, kind of letting us behind the Varys veil a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we got that in episode 4 when Varys has given us the, let me tell you again the story of when I was cut, you know, and opens this box and there's the sorcerer in there, you know. But I don't necessarily, like a lot of people say, that wasn't in the books, which it wasn't. But I think what they're really letting you do is they're letting you see
Varys.
Dude is powerful. Dude is powerful.
Well, and... he's planning for the long game.
Yes.
He's willing to let stuff sit for a very long time.
And in the books, we don't get as much behind the veil. We get almost nothing behind the veil with Varys. You know what I mean? So I like, and the guy who plays Varys does such a good job.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, it's almost like he really is a eunuch. I believe it. That man has no penis. Or testicles.
You were doing everything in your power to make this episode not safe for work.
Daryl's not here. Somebody has to.
And there's no alcohol
I just need,
either.
Yeah, unless, exactly. I'm drinking Powerade.
Say, unless you have your Powerade spot.
Nope.
I can give you some of Dodd's fancy alcohol he left with us.
He left you some scotch, didn't he?
No, he was talking about that.
No,
it's not scotch.
Oh, brandy, wasn't it?
No, it is.
Something else entirely. Oh, it's Woodford Reserve. Yeah,
they got really mad at me and Daryl when they found out we mixed it with Mountain Dew.
Yeah, good lord. Well then, Will's going to busy himself this episode with getting a drink. All right, listeners, I'm really going to have to teach Greg how to enjoy his alcohol. But anyway... now that I have a drink, we can continue.
I don't even remember what we're talking about.
Queen of Thorns.
We'd been talking about the Queen of Thorns, and then we'd moved on to Varys, I believe that man's a eunuch. So, yeah. Plus, I really like they're playing up his interactions with Littlefinger. And even though he hasn't really interacted with Littlefinger much this season,
he has been talking about Littlefinger and his kind of respect slash fear of him.
Yeah.
I liked his little line about how Littlefinger would, what was it, burn the kingdom down as long as he got to be king of the ashes, something like that. Which I think probably sums up his character pretty well.
Yeah. And I don't know him as well as you guys do, but I can agree with that.
No one really knows him.
Well,
What well, I just mean, like, we never get to see inside Littlefinger's head.
Well, I know.
When he comes out of shadows, he discards allies. That's what I know.
Oh, no, I thought we were talking about Littlefinger just now.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Varys.
No, Littlefinger.
Yeah. Littlefinger is an ally. He gets discarded by Varys.
I've done that once or twice.
Fair enough.
Or three times.
We really need another version of Littlefinger in the game, come to think of it.
We do.
I mean, the Shadows version is, I think, awfully deadly and cool, but I'd like to see another one around.
Other than the fact that Shadows version is House Stark.
I mean, he helps them for a while.
Or House Lannister. Dude should never have a House of
Fickle.
Yeah.
No, I think the ally trait represents that pretty well. Because and he's definitely an ally that gets targeted like that if he's on the table.
That's true.
But now we're talking about the game. We were supposed to be talking about the TV show.
I think we should be done talking about the TV show. What bothers me is that by the time our listeners are listening to this, they will have already seen episode 5. Which
right.
Stinks. So.
Maybe.
We cannot talk about episode 5 because we haven't seen it yet.
Exactly.
So sorry, listeners. All right, so props and slops.
Exactly.
What do you got?
I've got a couple props this week.
Okay.
I can't think of it. No, I can actually. Sorry, I think of one slops. Come to think of it, I'm just going to go ahead and throw that one out there. Slops to whichever cold virus I've currently contracted. Doesn't make me feel terrible. It's just really annoying.
Yeah, you've been in my bathroom like 8 times.
Yeah, exactly.
Blowing your nose.
Yep. Yeah. I've been sick with one symptom at a time for like all week. So like one day I was coughing. One day I had a sore throat. Like today I've got a runny nose. That's about it. Otherwise I felt perfectly fine. It's just annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. So there's my slop. Your turn.
I don't really have any.
No props or slops?
No.
Okay, well then I guess I'll have to follow up with my two props.
Yeah.
One is to a novel I read. It's a YA novel, young adult, for anybody who doesn't know. But it was really entertaining, called Shatter Me. The last quarter or so of the book feels kind of rushed. But I think looking at it, she's probably setting up a series. So I think she was just kind of like, all the cool stuff I want to build towards, I'm going to scoot to the next book and I'm just going to try to wrap this little bit of stuff up. But the first like half or more of it is really cool. It's set in kind of a futuristic post-apocalyptic world. The main character is a girl named Juliet, who is a little bit like, say, Rogue from the X-Men. Like if she touches someone else's skin, they are subjected to intense pain, and she starts out the book in an insane asylum where she's been for 3 years because she accidentally killed a toddler that she was trying to help, and she may or may not be crazy now from having been locked up in like solitary confinement, and it's written in a really, really cool way with like her kind of stream of consciousness, thoughts, and some stuff will be like struck out when she changes her mind, and then there'll be this other thing, or you'll see like what's going on in her head versus what she actually has to say and stuff, and the writing style is really cool.
Cool.
Aside from that, I started watching Hemlock Grove on Netflix. It's their, I think, third Netflix original series. I'm only about halfway through the series, but it's pretty cool. I would recommend it both to anybody that likes Supernatural, the TV show, And anybody that likes American Horror Story, my best description is it's kind of a mashup of the two of those. So it's going for a little bit more of a creepy, less campy vibe than Supernatural, but it's still got kind of the buddy thing, but it also has some of the kind of creepy murder mystery and everybody has a secret stuff that American Horror Story had. So it's been really cool so far.
I guess I do have a prop now that I think about it. Okay. Last weekend, I watched the first season of Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. First season's great.
I really enjoyed it. Watched it. My 11-year-old son had already seen the first episode, and so I said I'll watch it with him. Now, because I do have an 11-year-old son watching it with me, I went and basically wikied season 2 and season 3. Before I'm going to pay money to get them, I need to see...
Wow. Ruined it.
Pretty much.
Ruined it. Slops to Greg.
Yep. But I kind of felt like I had to do that because I needed to keep an eye on how... Obviously, you know, I don't want to spoil the show. So for those of you that haven't watched it, that want to watch it, you know, I guess turn this off now, cover your ears, whatever, la 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 again. Okay, but it's much like Game of Thrones. I expect right now I'm to the point where other than the main character, Rick, I assume everybody can die. Everybody.
Okay. Except that now you've already had it all spoiled for you.
No, I assumed that beforehand, but I kind of had to go look at it to say, how bad is this going to be? Like, season one, other than them giving a hacksaw to what's-his-name, who chops off his own hand,
Merle.
Pretty much the humans don't kill the humans, other than the guy at the end blowing up the CDC, okay? But I kind of got the feel that we might get to the point of humans killing humans. And, you know, I'm a little leery of how deep I want my 11-year-old son getting into a drama that involves that. So, you know, that's kind of why I wanted to go see just what it was going to be like.
And gotcha.
So, I don't know. I might buy it.
Probably doesn't come in until season 3.
Okay.
There was a little bit in season 2 that I'm trying to think back. I mean, you read the wiki stuff. So
yeah. Yeah, I have an idea now.
I don't really remember much other than...
What I know I have to do now is if I want to watch it, I have to buy it, pre-watch it, so I know specific scenes to tell my son, sorry, you know, you can't watch this right now. But, whatever.
Gotcha.
Alright.
Cool.
So, thanks for listening, guys. Another episode of Two Champs and a Chump.
Go team.
Danger Zone!